sit in front of the camera. I don't need a cue card. I got a voice. I can smile. I got enough white hair to look sage and wise. I've been without a cue card for 11 years. So you could probably have somebody drop them and I could survive for 60 seconds without turning red and a blank look all over my face. They get paid pretty good for that. Lancelot Andrews gave up his mastership to become chaplain in ordinary to Queen Elizabeth, and that was on her when we changed about 20 minutes ago. She's the head of the Church of England. A lot of perks go with that. You know, the king doesn't do that much, and the queen don't do that much for England. Where do they keep that dead weight? You know how many poor could be fed if they'd eliminate the crown? They could sell their stamp collection for enough to feed all the poor in Los Angeles for a week or two. Castle after castle. I have a friend that's a stamp collector. Has a PhD in economics. One of the more astute of the collectors that I know in this world. He's on the board of a bank, which tells you something of his financial strength. In England, he lives in the East. And he flies over regularly for board meetings. And he's always stayed in an apartment complex in England. And it was going to be leased to someone else that would prevent him staying in his favorite place. And he's that kind of guy. He collects art. He has one of the finest collections of Eastern American artists in the world. He discovered that it was going to be leased and he couldn't stay in his favorite place. And he's not poor. So he made all the necessary inquiries with his prestige as a member of the board of the bank. He wanted to buy the place. You know, shades of Howard Hughes that they gave him trouble about staying at a hotel in Las Vegas, so he bought the hotel. But it didn't work. He was informed, as he made the necessary inquiries through the layers of information, that it belonged to the crown. Not for sale, friend. They're among the richest people in the world. They head a church. One of the princes, if you'll recall, was in the news a few years back for having an affair with a girl in one of the Caribbean islands, staying there with her, that had done a few X-rated movies. Remember that? He's in line to be the head of the church. If his brother doesn't make it, the Church of England. I mean, what's fair is fair, friend. I think it's kind of cowardly of the news media to pick on Jimmy the Little. If they're fighting for principle, why don't they go for the big guys? I hate bullies that like to kick somebody that's down and that they think can't fight back. Why don't they take on the King of England and the Pope? Fair is fair. Now, I happen to believe that what I'm doing and the church that I'm building is more important in the world today than the Catholic Church and the Church of England. You say, oh, come on. Well, they both had to start somewhere. talking about power. The reason they don't take on the Pope and the reason they don't take on the Church of England is they're both bigger than NBC. Here you are. They're both bigger than ABC. They're both bigger than CBS. That's what they fear. Now, the TV evangelists were getting there, and they have seen their chance. Hey, I'm not defending what Jim Baker does. I'm not defending what the Catholic Church did. Marcinkus has got an arrest warrant out on him. He's hiding out in the Vatican, the former head of the Catholic Bank. I'm not defending what Cody did in Chicago. I'm not defending the prince having an affair with a racy woman. I recognize they got the same equipment that other people have. And they have to deal with it. I'm not defending what Origen did to deal with it either. I'm just saying what's fair is fair. And you better wake up. There's the public out there. If you have any religious inclination at all, you're being bullied. I find it rather hollow. The way they have extended this attack. The story's been told. It's not news anymore. The real motives are becoming apparent in the way they keep like dogs shaking this bone. The issue is the right of people to identify the position of the leaders of their faith and give to them perks that testify to the value judgment of the people. And I've taught, before this crisis came up, I used to teach church leadership at a college. And one of the subjects I spent some time on was leadership involves many elements. It involves the position that is God-ordained. It involves a quality of integrity that commands respect. It involves leadership skills. It involves communicative skills. It involves many things. Happy is that church that has the perfect leadership combo. But when you have someone who stumbles in the position of leadership, be careful that you don't destroy the position that God ordains and the position that's necessary for the survivalship of the entity that is being led in the process of over-attack on the person who stumbled. Separate the person from the position. PTL would have been much better off to have chosen a substitute or a successor leadership and said, we're going to give it every benefit we gave Jim and Tammy. They then could have sought the best. But they're letting the news media tell them that a leader should be there for nothing. And thereby they're cheapening the position of leadership. And as such, they are cheapening the meaning of what the organization exists for. I mean, there have been a lot of people complaining that examination of the books, they don't give much to missionaries. Well, I guess they've given more to missionaries than the news media has. I mean, I'm really interested in this. I find it really ironic, this sudden concern of the news media for giving to missionaries. They're just looking for things to criticize. He gave up his mastership to become chaplain in ordinary to Queen Elizabeth, who delighted in his preaching and made him prebendary of Westminster and afterwards dean of that famous church. That's quite a church, too, at Westminster, you know. Westminster Abbey. I wonder what that would sell for. I mean, you know, they could move the people that are buried there to a pauper's grave as a proper testimonial. Let's dig up David Livingstone and move him out to a pauper's graveyard as a testimonial to what a minister should, you know, you should keep your whole testimony going. I mean, if you're to be a pauper in life, don't ruin your testimony by being buried in Westminster Abbey. Man, put your bones in a humble place. I'm just one lone voice in the wilderness, but I don't think I'm right. I know I'm right. And somebody better continue to set the record straight. All that is happening is people of faith are testifying to the value and dignity of that which symbolizes, as the spokesman, the meaning of their faith. You put it in a Volkswagen, you are saying something about what that ministry is worth. I've seen these little bugs all over the world. You know, they're good cars. One of the 10 best built cars in the world. I don't see many kings driving them. Don't see many Arab sheiks driving them. In spite of the fact that they're probably better cars for the desert than some of these Warbakul monsters. With no replacement parts that these sheiks buy. Why did this guy build the Taj Mahal? It's a testimony of the value he felt toward the woman he loved. These are symbols. And a leader of a religious organization symbolizes. Now, Jim Baker stumbled. But let's not have the right of people to give perks to their leaders destroyed because of this one jerk. You want me to continue?
Yeah.
Now, I'm reading about to take a little side road from our teaching on church history to you that just joined us. I'm reading from the Translators Revive, Biographical Notes of the King James Version Bible Translators by Alexander McClure. I've been spending a lot of time showing there's some real jerks in the church. Church has always had problems because it has people in it. But it has survived because in every generation some cream rises to the top. And the church will survive this crisis. If for no other reason, there are those like myself who are helping sort it out from the smokescreen of the news media. Their attack is not just to attack Jim Baker, but to attack the system. Well, we haven't eliminated the presidency because of Watergate, and we won't eliminate it because of Iran scam. And I notice the news media is lamenting the fact, finally, that just maybe Watergate, Iran scam, the Wall Street scandal, Boesky, the scandal in the colleges and the sports area, the payoffs, and now the television evangelist scandal, just might reflect a departure from the teaching of values in the schools. The news media is finally waking up. That's what my ministry is all about. Inspiring a testimony of value. And the point I'm making tonight is the right of church people to symbolize the value that they place in God's gifts to them is absolute in this country. It's a constitutional right. And the Ephesian letter says God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. Now, people that are in love with rock music idolize their rock stars and pay big money and make them rich. The news media plays their games. I mean, they promote one another all the time, the paternity of the news media. They have a chance to show a human side and elevate one of their members. For going through a crisis of an open heart surgery, they do it. I've never seen a reaction with all the shootings that go on in Los Angeles. I've never seen such an outpouring as when Jerry Dunphy was shot. With the girl in the car with him. Nobody questioned that. But other people get shot and they don't get that attention. Dr. George's charitable activities get a prominence, much more news than the charitable activities of some other people who do as much or more. I'm not objecting to that, I'm just recognizing it. One of their members breaks a leg on one of their programs, and we get it in our living rooms with the kind of coverage that creates heroes, hero worship. Are they going to try to tell us that they don't have that ability to sort of praise one another? I listen to Connie Chung on The Tonight Show, euphorating about the newsman that she admires so much. Who is that CBS guy that's forever saying, "That's my dad"? What's his name? Who? Sam Donaldson, yeah. He's kind of ugly. Tell me they're not chasing their egos. Their agents get more than some pastors get. I just don't like the attack on the ministry that suggests that all ministers are retards and dopes and second-rate citizens who, at best, are robbing from the poor to even be fed. So I'm studying those who translated the King James. Lancelot Andrews, born in London, 1565. Once a year at Easter, he'd pass a month with his parents, and during his vacation, would find a master and learn a new language he had never studied before, till he ended up mastering about every language of Europe. When he died, he left some endowment for fellowships and 300 folio volumes to his own school. He wasn't a pauper. He gave up his mastership to become chaplain in ordinary to Queen Elizabeth. And I got hung up there remembering she's the head of the church. She lives in style. Made him prebendary of Westminster and afterwards dean of that famous church. Sounds like she put the one in the church that she wanted. She liked his preaching. A Westminster Abbey is a right smart little cottage. In the matter of church dignities and preferments, that's another word for perks. He was highly favored. It was while he held the office of Dean of Westminster that Dr. Andrews was made director or president of the first company of translators, composed of 10 members who held their meetings at Westminster. Why didn't they meet at one of the cheaper cottages in London? Why wasn't Westminster just sold and the money given to the poor? The portion assigned to them was the five books of Moses and the historical books to the end of the second book of Kings. Perhaps no part of the work of the King James Version is better executed than this. With King James, he was the head of the church. Dr. Andrews stood in still higher favor than he had done with Elizabeth, the royal pedant, had published a defense of the rights of kings in opposition to the arrogant claims of the popes. That made him stand in good. Like that chaplain that composed a weather prayer, got a medal from Patton. He was answered most bitterly by the celebrated Cardinal Bellarmine. The king set Dr. Andrews to refute the cardinal, which he did in a learned and spirited quarto highly commended by Casaubon. To that quarto, the cardinal made no reply. For this service, the king rewarded his champion by making him Bishop of Chichester, to which office Dr. Andrews was consecrated November 3rd, 1605. This was soon after his appointment to be one of the translators of the Bible. He accepted the bishopric with great humility, having already refused that dignity more than once. The motto graven on his episcopal seal was the solemn exclamation, quote, "And who is sufficient for these things?" End quote. At this time, he had an episcopal seal, friend. He didn't just sign his name on a piece of toilet paper. At this time, he was also made Lord Almoner to the king, a place of great trust, in which he proved himself faithful and uncorrupt. The alternate to that is he had a position capable of being corrupt in. Don't mix the position with the man. Some do it good, some don't do it so well. In September 1609, he was transferred to the bishopric of Ely, or Ely, and he was called to His Majesty's Privy Council. That is not a bathroom. In February 1618, he was translated to the bishopric of Winchester, which, if less dignified than the archiepiscopal see of Canterbury, was then much more richly endowed. So that it used to be said, quote, "Canterbury is the higher rack, but Winchester is the better manger." At the time of his last preferment, Dr. Andrews was appointed Dean of the King's Chapel, and these stations he retained till his death. That's why he was able to leave an endowment when he died. In the high offices Bishop Andrews filled, he conducted himself with great ability and integrity. The crack-brained king... What this book says. The crack-brained king, who scarce knew now to restrain his profaneness and levity under the most serious circumstances, he was the head of the church. Crack-brained, scarcely now able to restrain his profaneness and levity, crack-brained. scarcely now able to restrain his profaneness and levity under the most serious circumstances. Yet the news media just fell all over themselves to go and be present and lick the boots, figuratively speaking, of those who drove the carriages of the prince that not that much long ago was accused of bedding a star of X-rated movies in the Caribbean. My, how they can forget when they're dealing with somebody superior to them. The crack-brained king now hardly able to restrain him. Am I boring you? His profaneness and levity under the most serious circumstances was overawed by the gravity of this prelate and desisted from mirth and frivolity in his presence. I'm not sure, but I don't like the king better than the prelate. And yet the good bishop knew how to be facetious on occasion. Edmund Waller, the poet, tells of being once at court and overhearing a conversation held by the king with Bishop Andrews and Bishop Neal of Durham. The monarch, who was always a jealous stickler for his prerogatives and something more, was in those days trying to raise a revenue without parliamentary authority. He was the head of the church. In these measures, so clearly unconstitutional, he was opposed by Bishop Andrews with dignity and decision. Waller says the king asked this brace of bishops, quote, "My lords, can I not take my subjects' money when I want it, without all this formality in Parliament?" The Bishop of Durham, one of the meanest of the sycophants to his prince and a harsh and haughty oppressor of his Puritan clergy, made ready answer, "God forbid, sir, but you should.